Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about speaking truth. And I know that we're the impartial third party, and therefore we're not supposed to really have a serious opinion that sways the whole thing. But sometimes, in order to get things back on track and to, for heaven's sakes, reach a successful outcome that's workable, you have to have some input. And that's really why people ask you to be the leader also, right? They ask you to be the leader so that you can, well, lead. So that you can really say, well, this, I think we're going to, let's think about this. Let's negotiate this. Let's think about it. So as a leader, what is truth, because we will be speaking truth, within our context, within the context of a mediation, a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is that we're leading? What is speaking truth? Huh? How do we do it? Oh, this is a good point. Yes, and I do agree with it. A lot of folks are using the word, thank you all for being here and for participating. Thank you. A lot of folks are using the word opinion somewhere along the line in their answer. And it is, truth is an opinion, isn't it? It's an opinion based on known facts. It's an opinion based on, well, what you've got at hand at that time, which is why sometimes truth changes, doesn't it? Because things change. But you can only judge by what, by the now, by what you've got in front of you now as circumstances. And then you look back and you go, oh, that was a dumb mistake. But was it really not? It was just, it came out that way, kind of. Whoops, yeah. Yeah, I'll go with this too. How about the most workable solution under the circumstances? Muhammad says it's the most workable solution under the circumstances. Yeah, most workable solution under the circumstances is the truth you need to speak. Yes, truth needs to be able to accommodate revision as circumstances change, as Lee says. Mm-hmm. Quite a few people are talking about value systems as being the generating truth. So I think we do have foundational value systems that do impact at least what we think the truth is. Fair? Yeah. Because sometimes it's kind of like, well, not certain if that's really true or not, but it comes from my foundational value system. And we're going to talk about that, talk about what that is. So, we're going to think about voicing the truth as leader, the truth as we see it, right? Because it's an opinion, really. So, how do we do this? We're supposed to be the impartial third party, the leader. How do we voice this truth? How do we make it part of the negotiation process? When we are leader, not exactly participant. And, of course, it does depend somewhat on leadership style and somewhat on what is expected of your leadership style, which is not the same thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. How do we voice the truth? How about with civility rules? How about as being a model of the civility rules? And enthusiasm also, of course. Mm-hmm. by being certain that a lot of you are saying to tell the employer. Remember, on this show, we use the word employer as a complete generic. It does not necessarily imply an employment relationship. We call whoever it is that was smart enough to bring us in as leader the employer, right? Yeah. We call whoever it is that was smart enough to bring us in as leader the employer. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so it is a generic term. It does not necessarily imply an actual employment relationship. And whoever brought us in might indeed not be an individual. It might be like a board or a corporation or something like that. So, yes. Okay, let's get our areas done, and then we'll talk about we'll talk about the idea of really speaking to the employer and to the media, right? Yeah. People ask you about foundational value system now. Well, hang on a second. What else do we? How else do we voice the truth as an impartial leader? How about respect on all sides, which is civility rules, but even more so, that we're really respectful. And we have some, well, I think our next topic is going to be empathy, right? Which is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Always remember that empathy, at least as we use it on this show, is understanding, not necessarily agreement. That makes a big difference to how you think about it, right? Right. And also we have to think about preconceptions in when we voice it, especially since we're the one that's voicing what we think is a truth. We have to think about our own, right? Yeah. And whether or not we're voicing from our own foundational value system, our own preconception, and it's not necessarily applicable. We have to think about that. So, shall we do these in order? Some of you guys want to talk about foundational value system first. All right. Yes and no. People are asking if foundational value system is bias. Not necessarily. And we're going to talk about it in greater depth later on in the show because we've set things out in sequence. A foundational value system might be biased. It is learned behavior, either learned through somebody told it to you, somebody who you really respect the opinion of, maybe your elder, maybe a family member, maybe your culture told it to you. It's an idea that's something that other people look at from the outside and think of as an opinion. You think of as truth, as a fact, as that's the way the world is, right? Yes, this is in the United States, and this is kind of an Americanism, I found out because people ask, and this is, of course, a global show. It's your comfort zone also. It's foundational because it permeates how you think about the world. How you think things should be, how you think things are, never mind what they should be. This is the way it is, and this is the way it's always been, and this is the way it should be, right? Yeah, that's foundational value system. It's not necessarily one thing, because, all right, I am an American. I am a Christian, which makes a different kind of value system, but underlying, most religions have the same basic values. Don't be kind to each other and don't kill each other, essentially speaking. I mean, it all kind of boils down to that. And it is what you grew up with, what you learned as you went along and what you kind of developed as your foundational value system as you experienced life. A lot of people change their value system. They start out in a family that has, for example, a real set religious idea. And that changes. They change their religion over time and go for something different that they judge to be more attuned with what they think is truth. Now, this is not always cultural or experiential. There's also corporate, business. And I use corporate in a loose way because I see nonprofits have this too. There is corporate value system. We're using it like we use the word employer in a generic manner. But there's a value system that underlines things that this is the way we do things, so this is the way they should be done, right? This is the way we've always done it. It's always worked for us. We like it. We don't want you to change it. It's comfortable, and we know what the answers are going to be. If you guys will excuse me for 1 second, it's a sign that this is a live show. I am actually going to blow my nose. Isn't that awful? You can probably hear it. Hang on. Thank you. Sorry about that. But it will make my voice less wonky. And I got so emotional talking about foundational value systems. We all have them. If you think about yourself, even if you don't subscribe to a particular religion or anything, you've got some underlying core ideas about how the world should work. That's your foundational value system. Businesses don't necessarily need to actually be corporations, but we're going to call it corporate. Businesses, organizations, nonprofits, groups, they've got kind of a foundational value system, oftentimes shared by the individuals who are dealing with them, who work there. Yeah. And it is one of the reasons that people choose them to work with. I'm going to say work with because a lot of times they are not necessarily being paid money. They choose to work with partially because they share a foundational value system. They think they're doing good in the world. They think that they're right. They think that the organization, basically speaking, speaks truth. Right? Yeah. So that's what a foundational value system is. We'll talk about it a little bit more later on in the show. So what is truth according to leadership in our context? We're going to start out with the concept that it's an opinion using the known facts, right? Yeah. Known at the time is the key to it. Yes. Yes, thank you. In this day and age, which is actually quite fabulous, you can look stuff up. You know, when I started this, because I've been an attorney since I was 22 years old, y'all can decide by looking at my picture, or maybe you've seen me in person, how long that's been. But let's say it's been a long time. When I started out, there was typewriters and books and newspapers. Well, gee willikers. I mean, you can look stuff up, but it was already stale because it had to appear in print somewhere. Well, my goodness gracious me. And it was cumbersome, and you had to have lots of interns and like that. Nowadays, we can look stuff up. The key to it is, though, as we all know, the Internet's a funny little animal. And not everything you see on the Internet is exactly true, right? Right. Nothing wrong with that. It just means that we are going to go forward and we're going to look at everything and not stop when the internet agrees with us and go, oh, yeah, we, gosh darn it, we're geniuses. The internet, look at this. There's whole web pages that agree with us. Well, let's look at all of them. Let's look and see. First of all, we got to know what the opposition's argument is. Second of all, we want to know because, quite frankly, we can learn something. You go, oh, my goodness, I didn't know that. Every day I have this. I go, oh, my goodness, I didn't know that. I mean, it's amazing. It's kind of like, wow, really? Which is why we research all sides and don't just quit when we get validated, right? Right. Full research, full disclosure. You find something that's exactly opposite and it seems reasonable and you go, oh, yeesh. Let's all think about it. Let's have full disclosure and not just gloss it over and pretend you didn't see it. Right? Right. Yes, that's why we have teams that do the research and not individuals because there is a temptation, let's face it. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. The other thing we can do to have our opinion of the based our truth be a good opinion based on the known facts is to actually ask for some expert advice, right? Yes. Call in some experts. Find out if we've got some unintended consequences brewing. Ooh, I hate unintended consequences. Yes, that's when you take action. Because you think you have looked at everything, and then the repercussions of your action affect someone. Darn it, you didn't even know they existed. You didn't have any idea that there would be repercussions on them. Oh, what type? You go, oh my goodness, I had no idea. Also, I like to have the expert, if we're making new laws, if we're writing something, making new rules in some way, making new regulations, I like to have a third-party expert look at what we've written and really interpret it just like a judge would interpret it, just without being a part of it. Pardon me. Without being a part of it, because otherwise it might be interpreted funny and in a way that we didn't foresee, right? And we've gotten too close to the wording. We've argued it out. We've thought about it carefully. It seems crystal clear to us. And the meaning seems crystal clear because we've worked with it and we've seen it too much. I put it in front of somebody who would be the person who would interpret it and say, what does this mean and what would you do if this was the new regulation, for example? And sometimes you get an interpretation that's not exactly what you had in mind, that has some sort of a loophole, that has some sort of a, the wording in some way indicates something that you were like, let's see how to reword that, and that's where the expert can help also. Yes. People are asking who I choose as an expert. The answer, in my opinion, the best expert is somebody who has done it before. Done it and succeeded is always nice. Done it and failed is instructive. Because it tells us what not to do and where it went wrong, right? And they're still interested. I am less interested in credentials, as in types of degrees after your name, right? As I am in experience and done it before. And how'd you do it, right? The employer, remember, we're using it as a generic term, and especially the media, which if you've got something that impacts the public, they will be interested. They're impressed by credentials, pieces of paper. So I like to have both. Now, sometimes a person with experience has credentials, but let's say they don't particularly. I like to have both. I like to have someone who really tells us how they did it, because that's real practical, and then someone who can stand up and be the spokesperson to the media and say, how come we're doing it right? How come this is a good idea? How come this, which has not been tried before, is the way to do whatever it is that we're trying to effectuate? Yeah. And that's very important, to really get people to understand this is good. This is something we should back, we should vote for, we should try to get instituted, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. I do, yes, thank you. Those of you who have dealt with me know that I also like, and this is from experience, right? I like to have competing experts, not necessarily talking to the media, which only confuses public opinion, right? Remember, the media makes public opinion. They really do. Don't even argue with me about that, because in my experience, the citizenry, the public, are deeply influenced by what the internet says nowadays, but what any kind of media says. And I am not biased about some sort of traditional media, piece of newspaper or television program or something. No, I think some of the most influential media is the blogs that you follow, because they're really to your taste. They're to your, well, to your foundational value system. Because you choose people to follow who you agree with, let's face it, and think that they have real valid opinions. Yes, and yes, I do. People are asking how would I feel about a rule about not dealing with social media at all during the process. Yes, I do not allow blogging and like that during the process, because people do it on the fly. And it's written down, right? It can be interpreted funny. It's like I just told you about having an expert look at what it is that we've written to interpret it, so that what I meant to say on social media might not be how it comes out. Yeah. And then the various bloggers and stuff, and traditional media too, they get their stuff off the internet, will take little scraps and pieces of what I said and glue them together and do something incredibly, that's not at all what I meant, right? No, let's try not to do that, folks, right? Yeah. We're going to really concentrate on what it is that we want, what it is that we're working towards, and that's why we have a media spokesperson. So that everybody in the room is not a media spokesperson. We can agree on the message and have it put forth. Yes and no. People are asking if the leader is the media spokesperson. Sometimes. Sometimes we're the most qualified. Sometimes not. I sometimes like to have the experts talk about to the media and make pronouncements and like that, because I might be an expert in leadership to get this negotiated properly in a workable solution, but I might not be an expert on the topic, right? And there's somebody who's better at that, who's more impressive, whose words count more. Does that count? Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah, who is more impressive to the folks that are watching. Mm-hmm. And yes, and really, really an expert, and really think about what the unintended consequences are, right? Yeah. And yes, I do like competing experts, because I like them to tell us everything they know, because, you know, experts are humans. They have a foundational value system too, and a comfort zone, and kind of blinders, and an opinion about what should be and what is done. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we want to do as leaders when we're talking about truth is to get a workable solution. Because sometimes there can be a truth that is lovely and true and a real valid opinion, but it's not workable. And you've seen those groups, right? They come out with a lovely mission statement and a value statement and seven other statements, but no plan of action, no workable plan, and now that we've finished with the group and talking about it and talking in theory, in faith, kind of, there's no next step. What is it that we're going to do to implement this is the question I always like to know. What are we going to do about it? It's a workable solution, right? When you get done with one, sometimes you're at a workshop, and that is, of course, an example. It's not real life. But when you deal with real life, with a negotiation, when you deal with me, I want to see a workable solution. I want there to be definite next steps. I want there to be next steps after the next steps, when the next steps succeed, right? We need to know what we're going to do to make this happen, to make things better, to really make the world a better place all the way around. What can we do? Right? And yes, thank you. One of the ways to make to have workable solution be the truth and something that goes forward and really works is to be able to replicate it. Right? Yeah. Yes. Hussein says that replicable is the most important because it takes into account changing circumstances. Yes. And which means that what you're replicating is not just some rules that don't have any flexibility. Remember that truth kind of changes. It does. And replicability has to be flexible so that what works in this situation is applicable to the next situation. But is the situation exactly the same? Well, no. It has to deal with human beings and with circumstances at the time. There is no way it is exactly the same. Similar, but not exactly the same, right? Yes, so we've now decided that truth is flexible, right? And depends on the circumstances at the time. Okay, we'll go with that too. Quite a few people, Margaret and others, are talking about also truth changes and becomes flexible when societal norms change, right? Society changes. It becomes more tolerant, hopefully, more flexible, more able to accommodate different kinds of people, especially now that we're really in such close contact with all kinds of people all over the world. And we know stuff that we didn't know years ago. They were over there and we were over here. But there is no us and them anymore, really, let's face it. Everybody's here. We're all talking to each other, right? Okay. Lots of people, Greg and others, are talking about media spin, S-P-I-N. That may be an Americanism, but it means that the media has kind of an agenda. And a lot of media does. We think of media, even the non-traditional, less so, but it's true of the traditional. We think of media as being kind of reporting the news and not being having an agenda, not being partial to one side or the other. This is not necessarily true. And the media can put a spin, a way of reporting something that indicates a conclusion. is what spin really is, right? Yeah, it indicates a conclusion that you should have. And that spin makes quite a bit of difference. It means that public opinion is being affected because the media creates public opinion. And media truth is pretty darn flexible. Because, you know, they say things like photos never lie. Well, yeah, they sure do. Even if they haven't been doctored. Because nowadays you can do Photoshop and like that and really make the photo lie. But let's say that it's a true photo and it hasn't been retouched in any way. But I could show you a picture of someone, for a politician, for example, and you have an agenda about who you'd like to be in office. So you show pictures of the person that your candidate that you favor, that your media outlet favors, looking confident and intelligent and doing nice things like, I don't know, helping small children, doing something really, he or she is a good person type stuff. And you show, but you select those out of the grouping of pictures that you've got where you show him picking his nose, right? And looking kind of demented and yelling at a underling. Because you've got those pictures too, but you select the good ones. The ones that make him or her look heroic. We all want heroes for our leaders, right? Right. And for the opposition, you do the opposite, right? Now, have you doctored the photos? No. But you have made someone look better than someone else in comparison, deliberately. That's spin. That's not necessarily lying. Well, all right, it could be lying, but let's say it's not. It's not necessarily faking something and actually putting out false information like those crazy tabloids that I'm not even sure if they exist or not. But I had a little window show up on my computer. You all know that always confuses me and makes me think funny thoughts. So they're pushing an agenda without you realizing they're pushing an agenda. And you got to think about that too. So truth can sometimes be a matter of impression, right? Yeah. Okay, I'll take this on as a thought. Suki and others are saying that truth is flexible because it depends on perspective. Yes, it does. It depends on your perspective, what you think is true. Now, this is, I think, a direct quote from a James Bond movie, but I always thought it wasn't a very good movie, I must confess this, but I always thought the quote was excellent, and I'm certain that they didn't make it up. It must be a quote that's been around a long time. But it's, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. It depends on your perspective. Yeah, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter. Depends on your perspective. Your perspective influences your truth. Now, and both sides are very sincere about that. That's how they see it. That's how it's presented to them. That's how we need to come towards the middle, right? And we have a workable solution. Yeah. People are still talking about the foundational values that we talked about before, that truth has foundational value system. Okay, I'm going to put it a different way because we talked about this before. Your foundational value system is usually your comfort zone. Now, comfort zone is a little bit of an Americanism, but it's what makes you feel comfortable. You know how the world is supposed to go, and let's make it try to go that way, because it's good. It's something that you want, right? Yeah. So your foundational value system is your comfort zone. This is how the world is supposed to be. Or alternately, or maybe the same thought, this is how the world has always been, and it's good. This is how I'm comfortable. And I know if I go down this path with my comfort zone, that I understand what is happening. Sorry, took a sip of water. I understand what it is I'm supposed to do. I understand my response. Hey, we all like to feel comfortable and in control, and like we understand what on earth is happening, right? Yeah. This is very, very important to understand for ourselves as leader, right? Because we've got comfort zones too, and we've got favorites in the negotiation process, right? We kind of think one side is more valid, or we kind of like one person or group of people a little bit better than the other group because they're easier to deal with and they have some foundational values that we value, that we share, right? And then there might be other people not so much. You got to watch for that because you're the impartial third party and you do not want to be biased in any way. And that is a very important point, that we're not going to play favorites. We're not going to be biased, right? Yeah. And we got to think about our preconceptions, which is leading us to our next big segment of this show, which is how to voice the truth. Okay, we thought about it. We're pretty certain that this is a truth that needs to be voiced. We're the leader. We're the impartial third party. How are we going to do this from a real practical perspective? Because we're practical people. We want to know the how to do it part. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. One of the main tools that we're going to be used to voice truth, to tell people our opinion and kind of lead them down a path towards something that we think is workable and viable and a really good idea, as maybe opposed to some of the stuff that we've been talking about in the group, right? Kind of nice and theoretical, but not doable, not workable, not practical, maybe even not funded, might be a real thought, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to use the civility rules, right? Right. Yes, I know a lot of you have already brought them up. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Because we talk about the civility rules all the time. For those of you who are new, and welcome to everyone, the civility rules are the only rules that Recipe for Peace Now has. And at the core, they say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. We're going to act in a respectful manner, right? Yeah. Everybody's going to get their turn. Everybody's going to be heard. Everything's going to be considered. And then we're going to make a team and work together towards what we agree on is what we think is the right path. That's what we call the experts and like that. Mm-hmm. Every time I start a new group, I announce the civility rules. I announce them even if I have dealt with these specific people before. I announce them even if in my experience it looks like we will not need them because we are all on the same page. We just need to get together to act, right? But we all are in agreement about something. I announce them immediately. And then you must enforce immediately. I announce them up front, right? Really, I announce that they're the civility rules, they're enforced. You need to enforce them immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. You can't wait until things get really kind of out of hand and then go, remember when we first started and I announced the civility rules? Now they're going to be enforced. You've lost it. You've lost control. And as leader, you need to have control of the civility. There is no better way of saying that. You need to be able to make certain that we have a civil, respectful atmosphere. Yes. Yes, the way to do this, and people are asking how, and that's a very good question. How is always a good question, because how are you going to know anything? The answer is that before you take on a leadership position, before you take on a group, and I must confess that if I have a specialty, and I kind of do, my specialty would be groups that have already failed, but they need to reach a successful negotiated outcome. It can't just go away. And oftentimes, I have the same people as members of the group that, how shall I put this delicately, think they're going to fail again because they failed the first time. And sometimes, as an added treat, yes, I have the prior leader now as one of my participants. This is a person who has human nature. It is only fair to have human nature. You have to expect human nature. Now, maybe it's not true, but it would be human nature to think, ooh, I would just as soon that Sue's group fail, because then I could say, look, even Sue couldn't get this to a workable conclusion, and not look like I couldn't get it to a workable conclusion because I'm a failure. Yeah, so you've got at least one person in the group with a negative agenda. We're going to have a convivial atmosphere, the civility rules, and we're going to have to all work as a team towards success. How are we going to do that? Now, I'm very, very lovely in stating how things are and like that, but I need some power to go with my words, and so do you. Let's take another sip of water. Hang on, folks. Pardon me. Oh, yeah. And the answer is, before you take on a group, even if it's not one that's already failed, I don't care if you have no experience at all, it won't enhance your reputation to fail. So you're going to need some power to enforce the civility rules. And that's the practical thought of it. You can say them, but you need some power to enforce them in case you've got the uncivil on your hands. And quite frankly, if you didn't have the uncivil on your hands, we wouldn't be having this civility rule conversation. Now would we? You need to get, I like it in writing, because people back out. You need the employer, whoever it was that brought you in, to back you, that you have to have cooperation and civility and teamwork, right? And not have hidden agendas for failure. I like to have this in writing. I like to know what I can do as a consequence if you refuse to obey the civility rules. I generally deal corporate. I deal business. Generally, the consequence is monetary. A fine. A demotion, right? Everybody on your level is a member of this group. If you can't act as an enthusiastic civil member of this group, you can't be on this level. You're going to get demoted. You're going to get fired, right? Yep, it's a good threat. I like to be able to bring the employer in to see how things are and to back me up, right? Yeah, I like to be able to bring out the big guns. Usually, if you tell people the consequences, and you might have to do it at least once as a bad example, oops, people understand that not to mess with you, and we're going to reach a workable, successful outcome, and then we're all going to get rid of each other, right? Yeah, that's a good point, too. I don't know why this surprises everyone, but I give this to you as a gift. I say to people, the more civil we are, the more convivial, the more teamwork we do, the more we pull together, the faster this will get resolved, and we can go on with our lives and not keep meeting and keep dealing with each other. And like that, we can go the next step, which is workable, and really get something done. For some reason, this is an amazing revelation to some people. Really? I could, if we succeed, we can get done? Fabulous. I swear to you, people don't, they go, oh, that's a good example. People actually write that down. I mean, really? Yes, thank you. Lisa, sometimes you just have to state the obvious. Obviously you do. Yes, you have to state the obvious. So be sure and state the obvious, because it hasn't occurred to them. It's the darndest thing. The other thing about civility is that you, my friends, as leaders, must model civility. Yes, you cannot enforce something that you do not do. You must model civility and model enthusiasm. If your group thinks that you think that this is a hopeless act, then your group is going to think it's a hopeless act and they won't be able to do, well, fill in the blank, whatever it is. Right? Right. You need to model civility. This is a very good question that is being asked by Anika and others. The question is, what happens if you blow it? If you go to model civility, and you heard it, right? Yeah. And it just, somebody really pushed your buttons. Somebody really annoyed you. And you lost it for a minute there. You're having one of those days. What should you do? Well, first of all, before you lose it, you need to take 3 deep breaths. You are the leader. You're in charge, and the civility rules are in play. Don't do it to begin with, ever. All right, you did it. Hopefully, you took 3 deep breaths, and you didn't do something so awful that you have to recuse yourself. You have to give up the ship and turn it over to somebody who's less stupid. Yeah, and you did something incredible. This is, ugh. I've been in business a really long time. I've never done that because it is not my nature to be uncivil and to get rude. I saw it done once and the group dissolved. I mean, you couldn't go forward. So don't do that. But let's say you've just been testy. You raised your voice. You did something not really egregious, but it wasn't terribly civil, and you wouldn't like it if one of your participants did it, right? Make yourself a bad example and apologize immediately. Don't just go on like nothing has happened. People will learn from it, for one thing, and then they will go, oh, well, Sue did acknowledge that that was kind of not what we had in mind. I bet that I can be cool also. And acknowledge things, right? Yeah, it'll be fine. And which is important. It's an important life lesson. It's an important thing to do. And it gives you credibility that you understood it, you had an oops, everybody has an oops now and then. As you get more experienced, you will not have them anymore. And a little bit depends on your personality, too. I don't tend to be bombastic, therefore I don't have trouble not doing so. I can model civility easily. Take 3 deep breaths if you think you can't, and just do it. Yeah. Because all sides have to be heard with respect, right? Yes. How are you going to have a negotiated consensus if we can't move forward as a team? And how are we going to be a team if we have no respect for each other? If we're nasty to each other? If we're sniping at each other? If we're not working and pulling together? Gotta do it. That not doing that is a violation of civility rules, and you bring out your big guns just to show that you cannot do that. You must be a full team member or get out. And that's really the truth. For all of this, and this permeates everything, just like the civility rules do, of course we're going to need some empathy. And remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Very, very important distinction. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. In order to have some understanding, we're going to, yes, thank you, a whole bunch of you were thinking about it already. We're going to break out the 5W questions, right? Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? Do we break them out in that order necessarily? Not necessarily. Do we ask them exactly in that way? Well, no. You work it around so that it's more natural than that. Do we ask them all at once at the same time in front of everybody? That's a judgment call. I don't know. It depends on the circumstances. But somewhere along the line, you want the answers to those questions so that we understand how to go forward as a team, so that you understand what it is that is keeping us from going forward as a team and where we agree with each other and how we can get towards the middle. If you don't have empathy, you don't understand where the middle is. And everybody, it's not just for the leader, everybody has to have some understanding for each other so that we can really find a workable solution. Yes, yes, everybody includes the employer, who I actually like to keep in the loop. I want my employer to understand what we are doing, I suppose, and to appreciate how complicated it is. Because they think, oh, well, you know, Sue can get this done in less time than she says and under budget. Well, okay, that might be my reputation, but it doesn't make it easy. There's a lot of thought that goes into this, and they need to understand also that they need to be flexible. And you can't just tell them to be flexible. They need to have been part of the process, right? Participants also. Let's have some empathy, some understanding for the outsiders who might be our opposition. Yeah, let's have some thought about them. Let's decide how far away we are. I like to invite them to the table if that's a possibility. Because sometimes we can get together. And we really do want the same thing. It's just we have different ideas about how to get it. And sometimes those different ideas can be blended into one powerful, workable solution. Yes. And remember to have some understanding for yourself, too. Then think about whether or not you've got some preconceptions that are making a difference to what you think truth is, right? Because what truth really is the workable solution. Truth is the team effort that creates something that we can all live with and can be replicated and can be used to really make things improved, to make things better, right? That's really what truth is. Truth is the path that works, the path that is Well, good, and good for everybody, right? Yeah. And you have to understand that everything I've just said is an opinion. And so we need to have an opinion that is workable, created by our team and outsiders, has empathy, and doesn't have unintended consequences, right? Unintended consequences is a real bad sentence. Yeah. And then you go, oh, well, that didn't work. Well, why not? My friends, we are out of time. We are going to not do the recipes. We'll try to get them to next time, but we had a really good conversation. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Pardon me. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.